outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
I did it again.
What did you get yourself into this time, Wade?
Twice in the last, 4 months, I've been to something they call church on Sunday mornings.
What?
It's not what I call church, but some people call it church. But yeah, I went to a Sunday morning service Sunday.
Wow. Okay. What got you into the doors of a Sunday morning gathering?
It's funny. I go alone because my wife won't go. I say, hey, want to go with me? She's like, be like, yeah, out of your mind. Now, this was, met a man last week who is the pastor of this particular plant, congregation going on. And, he's actually lives near where Lewis lives.
Oh, okay.
And, we were talking to him about, could we lease some space? It's a big, building and they don't use, but a very little bit of it. And, so they're very interested. We may actually get a little piece of that carved off for Fighting Chance, which is Lewis's working with, some of the more at-risk youth in the area. And, it's got about 50-60 kids around, and
oh my gosh,
yeah. So
he's gonna need a big space to house that many students.
So I'm just talking to the guy. I thought it'd be good to go and see what the fellowship is about and go hang out with them some Sunday morning. So I was free, so I went down there on Sunday. I just still can't figure out how people sit through that every week. I just can't, man. Oh, in fact, some of it'll come into what maybe may share a little bit later because there's so much double talk in that environment of songs about God intervening and then scriptures about the pain and travail of God not intervening, and just go, man, I'm glad I've sorted that out in my mind, because I look back at that going, that's a very manic, depressive kind of meeting thing about who is this God really, man? Is he this wonderful schmoozing loving dude, or is he this guy that's, because the text was Jeremiah, so that's a deal to deal with on the Sunday morning. Anyway, people were great. People, I mean, of the places I've gone, people were friendly, wanted to know who we were, Lewis and I and Maria. And so it was an interesting day, but yeah, I'm not going to rush right back, I don't think.
Not going to go through the membership process yet?
For sure not that. there's so many better ways to spend a Sunday morning. And I don't even mean just, you know, I mean spiritually there's better ways to do it. I heard for those people, and I was talking to Lewis because he was even joking about, you know, talking about starting a Spanish congregation that had one and it moved out and they would love to have one. He said, Lewis, why don't you pastor it? And I'm going, yeah, Lewis, why don't you? And he's going, well, then you can do the preaching. And I'm going, no. So afterwards, we were talking about it and we kind of just tasted the conversation a little bit. We'll get back to it again with Lewis. But
yeah,
what would you do if you had an hour and 15 minutes of people that want to get together and talk about Jesus and enhance their journeys? Would you do it that way? Would you do the mini concert, mini lecture? And he goes, I've never thought of this. I'm going, yeah, well, think about it. If we were actually going to hang out for an hour and a half, hour, 15 minutes on a Sunday morning with people or Sunday afternoon, what would we do that would enhance their journeys rather than distract from it? And yeah. So we're going to get back to that conversation.
Oof.
Because I think Lewis, I don't know if he's in his heart to do that, but I do think he's a voice in a certain part of our culture here that really needs to hear a different message of the gospel. And so I don't know. You kind of get the thing. We're kind of walking down this road, not sure where it ends, hoping it doesn't end where it could end. But, you know, God's kind of just lulling us in, come a little further here, come a little further and we'll just see where it ends up. So,
and this is primarily like you went there to explore for a space for Lewis's community to train at. Is that the reason why you went?
Yeah, we've been looking for a space to lease, but obviously, you know, when you're trying to lease in a, you got to be in a commercial district in Thousand Oaks. You can't just have it out in the neighborhood somewhere. And not too many stores want a boxing gym of young king gang kids next to them, right? So it's been very difficult. We've been looking for the last 6 months pretty aggressively. A man from Ohio actually offered to lease a year's worth or a couple years worth of space for Lewis. So we've been trying to find some space for that. This seems like the best of all options because we don't have to go through planning, city planning. We can just, you know, take off part of the facility and use it as youth outreach. And I think if we can work out the insurance issues, that's the big deal. But and the church needs income, quite frankly. The other congregation moved out and they don't have enough income to make it work. Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. Welcome back. So is there a best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
There wasn't really a best thing that I heard this week, to be honest. I think it was more the best thing that I saw this
week. Oh, I was going to go with worst thing you heard this week then. But if you want to go best thing you saw, we could do that. But
can we do best thing that I saw this week?
Sure.
Okay.
What'd you saw?
There's a group of people when I was growing up, when I was really young, that we just, there was three or four families that we did everything together. And we played together, we worked together, we adventured together. And it was really interesting because Sunday I got invited by a couple of the young people that I grew up with that are now adults. They now have their own families. They're now working professionals. And yet we got all together and just spent a Sunday afternoon together, playing, talking about life, doing games, cooking food together. And it was wonderful. It's been a while since I have gotten to have that type of experience again, and to get to see Elle with roughly 10 other kids, and they were all played. Like, she played from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 7:30 that night without a nap, skipped her nap, and played hard. Like, I've never seen her play with that kind of delight. It was so much fun to get to just be a part of that. And, you know, as you were talking about, like, what would you do if you had the opportunity to just spend life, and how would you want to do it, and how would you want to do community? And that was just wonderful. There were some people, there was a couple people there that are a part of a Sunday morning gathering. There was a couple families there that had been pretty badly hurt by a Sunday morning gathering. And so they just came over for lunch. But it was just, man, it brought back some good memories from when I was young. And it was really cool just to get to watch that and observe that again. What was the best thing you heard or saw this week?
You know, actually, I was going to quote my own book here, but I decided not to. I'm going to take another approach here. I'm actually rereading the So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore book there's a little, I've never read it once I wrote it. So it's been, that book's now almost 20 years old, about 18, something like that. Some of the chapters are 20 some odd years old, but I got this crazy idea. I've got this book I've been wanting to write to convey that transformational love kind of flowchart thing we've been talking mm-hmm. about, but I didn't want to do a chart. I wanted to do some other way to do it. And driving back from Dave Coleman's funeral that I officiated at in January, and I was just kind of reliving that time in our life, and I was thinking, you know, I've got to go back and read that book, So You Don't Want to Church Anymore. And I'd like to read it and just kind of relive that experience with Dave. And thinking about all that, I thought, you know what? Why don't I take what I've been wanting to do with this transformational love thing and put it in Jake's story, and take Jake 5 years later, going through some real pain in his life. His wife's accused him of having an affair he hasn't had, actually, with Diane, who was in the first book.
Ooh,
it was the pastor that had the affair, but somehow it gets mixed up that he did. And so it begins with him being falsely accused by his wife, who will not believe him when he says, "I didn't do it," and so leaves him. And now we're 5 years from when John left him.
Whoa.
And so I pick up the story there, and it's just, it has fallen together so well. So I'm writing new Jake chapters at the same time I'm reading the Jake book. And really thinking, there's more in that first book than I remembered. I'm going, wow, I wrote this. This was amazing. And it's just kind of weird. But I go, man, I don't recall that. And then I'm reading part of it. I'm going, I wish I'd have included this. And then the next page over, that's there. And I'm going, okay, I did include that. That's kind of interesting. So it's really weird reading something you're unfamiliar with. But I'm thinking, actually, I may even start a book club. I'd like to see if there's a group of people that want to zoom our way through Jake a chapter a week.
Ooh, okay.
Talk about some of the lessons and struggles to live out some of that reality and what Jake was going through. So that's one thing on my head. The other thing is I'm working on this new book, and man, I'm having fun putting myself in Jake's voice again. And John's not in the picture this time. Jake is actually becoming a John while he's dealing with some stuff in his own life. And there's some unique ways I get to really help people who kind of read the first book and went, I'm not sure who John was, and I'm not sure, you know, what the answer for church was, which that was all intentional.
Yeah.
But this will give a way to tie some bows on some of that stuff. And so I'm really excited. I got three chapters done and working on four. And I really toyed with posting a chapter at a time online and driving people nuts like we did the first time, but don't think I'm going to do it this time.
You're not? Well, see, I knew you were working on this project, and I can't wait to get to see, to get to read the continuation of the story. And that, I'm sitting here listening to how you're opening the book, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Wade, like, I can't wait to get to read some more of this, because I haven't got to read any of it, and I had no idea that you started it that way. That is going to be interesting.
And I have to swear to secrecy if I do, because if you start talking about it, other people are going to go, Sammy chapters, and I'm going, I don't know. I don't know how we'll do it. We could post it online, but you know what? That drove people nuts because it went from one a month to one every 4 months, and I just don't want to kill people that way. But anyway, to answer your question about best thing I heard this week, it was actually a conversation with somebody who works with young people and kind of helping them sort out a Jesus journey. And this is what he said while we were talking. He said, it would be easy to trust God to transform other people if I didn't have the Pharisees in my life to answer to.
Whoa.
I just kind of came up spontaneously because we were talking about, you know, people who are struggling with sin in their lives and not even knowing it's sin, feeling like it's an appropriate way to live and you know, the Bible's wrong about that or whatever. And you're loving them into Jesus and the pressure, do I have to make them follow the rules before I introduce them to Jesus, or do we introduce them to Jesus and let Jesus change them from within so they don't need the rules, which to me is all the new covenant stuff. It's not rules. It's relationship that transforms you. So eventually, you'll keep the law, but not by keeping the law, but by learning a life of love, being loved and loving. And so I just love that quote. It'd be so easy to trust God to transform others if I didn't have the Pharisees in my life to answer to.
I love that.
Because sometimes if you're in ministry, you don't answer to those Pharisees, you may not be getting paid long.
I love that statement. And yet, man, I was having a very similar conversation where a person that I know that had been a part of some ministry stuff, and they didn't use those exact words, but they made a very, very similar comment of, if my salary wasn't tied to XYZ person's opinion, it'd be so much easier to be able to just walk alongside of the people that they're walking alongside of.
That's where Watchman Nee might have been right. You know, he said, if you're going to live by the gospel, don't take a salary, don't go get it from people. You got to trust God to provide it, or you'll be beholden to the people who pay you your salary. And I hear that from missionaries overseas to people on staff at various congregations. The life they would love to live and the life they get paid to live are two different things, or what they risk if they follow through on something God's put on their heart. And it really, really draws us back to that space. Who am I trusting to provide for me? Is it that group of people, or is it Jesus? And for mostly, I mean, learning to trust Jesus for your income is not a little thing. It's not, oh, yeah, we'll just trust Jesus, because man, presumption overlaps with that. We think, well, God will just provide, and then he doesn't in the way we thought he would. And then, so, I mean, inviting God to be your provider is more than just, I'm going to do whatever I want and God will pay for it. It's so not that.
No, it is not.
And yet people kind of hope it is, and we've been taught that presumption is faith. And, oh, it's so hard watching people struggle with that reality. But it's so often when our income comes into conflict with our conscience, that's the God and mammon thing, right? Mammon wins out.
Yeah.
I would love to do this, but it's going to compromise this. And it's always the risk. There's a point at which, you know, following him. And we sang that song Sunday morning. I thought it was funny because I've talked about it a lot lately about, though none go with me, still I will follow. They actually sung that old chorus on
Really?
Sunday morning. And I'm going, God, this is hilarious, because that's that's what God's reminding me of lately. When I feel like, man, I'm walking this road, and then certain relationships fall away that you've really valued because they don't like the way you're walking. And that song, though none go with me, still I will follow. And I used to sing that with such passion and resolve. And it was like, when I complain about it, God's like saying, you told me I could. You told me you would. What? Oh, gosh, I didn't. But I sang it with gusto on Sunday morning. Going, yep, I'm still in this page. If it just ends up me, or me and you, or me and Sarah and you and Jess, or, you know, I'm still going to follow my heart
It's so interesting. I was talking with a client that I was working with, and the conversation came up about just people's perceptions of your behaviors and why you do things and justifying your behavior to people. And this phrase came out of my mouth, and it was one of those moments where in the counseling session, I hear myself say something and I'm like, oh gosh, I've got to come back to that, Lord. Like, please circle back to that, because that is going on in my heart. And the statement was, when did you decide that following Jesus might look a little crazy? When did you decide that it wouldn't look a little crazy? And it was just so like, because I'd literally been having that conversation a couple days before with the Lord of like, Father, sometimes it looks crazy when I'm following some of these things or doing some of these things. And when Jess and I are walking in faith, and it's been quite the road of faith and trust, of him teasing out, for example, salary and him providing for us and caring for us. And we're still on that journey, but man, it was so weird. It's like, when did you decide that you wouldn't look crazy if you were going to follow Jesus? And I caught myself and I was like, let me circle back on that agreement, Lord, because I'm talking to myself more than the client right now. And it was, it's so subtle though. Like those times or those expectations where I think, okay, like following God is going to look like this, or he might push the boundaries here, or he might push the boundaries there. But then when it comes to, I guess one of the biggest challenges that I'm still working on with him is real world, quote unquote, worldly knowledge or worldly, like what would be common sense to the world versus what the Lord asks us to do. And discerning, like, okay, Lord, is this what you're actually calling me to do? Right. And you and I've talked about that sometimes, like a good way to notice is that, is this challenging my own comfort? Is this challenging my own personal interest here? And yet, man, it's just such an interesting navigation, because then there's also that part of, like you were saying, of people who have the presumption about, well, I can just go and do whatever and God will take care of me. God will provide for me and he'll take care of it. And it's like, Lord, I don't ever want to be that presumption. I don't ever want to presume that and just fly off the handle. But then you're also calling me into this daily trust with you. And so how, like, untangling that still is really intriguing.
And that's why I think it's probably best to learn a lot of the trust stuff when our income is not on the line and feeding our families and some of that stuff. Yeah. I think the simplicity of growing in, okay, God, I'm going to learn to yield to your insights and do some of the crazy stuff when the implications aren't as profound.
Yeah.
And then it gives more trust in terms of being able then to take the bigger risky things. But when you were saying a thing about common sense, one, the joke is, and I think it's largely true, common sense seems woefully lacking in our world. Common sense today would seem like super intelligent for the way the world seems to work.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
But even good common sense, when God keeps saying my ways are higher than your ways, my thoughts higher than your thoughts, I find all the time my best thinking, Wayne's wisdom put to something, when God finally shows what he wants to do, it is so different. Mm-hmm. And so learning to live inside that God, and I've really come to love the way God thinks, even though at the beginning of it, I'm always going, oh, crud. When I'm in it, I'm going, oh, this is something. This is better than I thought it was going to be, always. But it seems that there would be, in the journey of those following Jesus, kind of a inherent suspicion of common sense. Because if we create God in our own image, we don't end up with a very good God. We end up with a God as intelligent as Wayne, or as whatever than as Wayne.
Yeah.
And that's not the God you want to follow. You want to follow the God who's transcendent, wise. He's got everything worked out. So he's not worried about tomorrow in the same way I'm worried about tomorrow, because I can't see it yet. Mm-hmm. He sees it. He knows how he's going to navigate through whatever's coming. And so if my trust level were enough to just follow him today, then tomorrow is going to take care of itself. But if I'm going to put my best reasoning up against the harebrained thought I have that might be God's, I'm going to follow my common sense and frustrate myself in the weeds more and more. And I think that's the biggest challenge. How do we sense what God's saying? How do we ponder it enough to, so we can affirm, yeah, this is not just Wayne harebrained scheme, kind of a presumptuous, if my life could be whatever I wanted to be, it would look like this, which is where presumption really comes from. It's always my desires fulfilled. And trust is, no, it's God's desire and God's will and God's light fulfilled. So how do I see that enough? And do I have the friends and people around me that I can bounce that off of so that I've got a better sense of whether it's just me or God, and then be able to act on it? And it's such, if it's so much better than common sense. And yet, boy, it's always scary because we've kind of, particularly those of us that have come from puritanical work ethic kinds of backgrounds, you just always, we have seen so many people do so many stupid things in the name of God that you just don't want to be in that club.
Yeah.
And yet always the enemy of the real is the mirage. It's the false stuff that looked good or talked good, but wasn't him.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge, man. How do we learn to live in that space and enjoy it? And it'd be a whole lot easier if the Pharisees weren't looking over our shoulders. But.
Exactly. And that's, man, as you were talking, like it, I was just kind of reflecting, and it took almost 15 years of God really, of me learning to live in God's love and a deepening of trust before he really approached the finding provision in him and seeing him come through financially for my family and for Jess and I. And like it took almost like closing in on 2 decades of relational trust before he approached that conversation, which is really like, it's really interesting when I think about that. I'm like, ooh, okay. Yeah. Like it took a long time of a lot of like trusting experiences and learning to know his character, learning to know that I can walk in him and starting to recognize those breadcrumbs, starting to see his signature in the world around me, before he even touched that conversation, which is really funny to me.
Yeah. And wise of him, right?
Yes. 'Cause
it's,
oh my gosh.
It's wonderful to make your mistakes on things that don't have implications for others.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm much easier to obey Jesus about something he's kind of nudging me toward if it's only going to affect me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If it's going to affect Sarah, if it's going to affect other people around me, then I'm a little more hesitant, a little more stuff here, God, to give me what you've got in mind, because I wish, and I used to pray this a lot. Somebody asked me this last week. Do you still pray that anymore? I think I shared it back podcast. I remember just sitting in my office going, Jesus, I got some big decision to make. Jesus, I'll do whatever you want me to do. You just walk in here, sit on that couch, say it out loud. I watch your lips move and I'll go, okay, I'm in. And it doesn't ever work that way. I've never been 100% certain of anything that I've followed. But being able to, and this person was asking, why wouldn't you think he would do that? Why? And I just think, I mean, if you're God after all, right, you're going to do this stuff in the best possible way for the people you want to engage.
Yeah.
He's not doing this for him. He's doing this for us. So, and I think about that analogy of the chrysalis opening and the butterfly finding its way out of the chrysalis. If that thing doesn't fight its way out of there, it doesn't have enough wing power to fly when it does. So if you see a butterfly hatching and you, oh, I'm going to help it, and you get out your little pocket knife and you peel the chrysalis open, it will not fly because its wings will be all hunkered down and there's no strength in them because the strength comes in pushing against the chrysalis. Mm-hmm. And I do think in our own sense, when God's not absolutely clear with us, which is always, he's not absolutely clear with us, it's because God's stretching those same spiritual muscles that will listen and follow. And you just can't have somebody else walk up and say, here's the right decision for you. You've got to struggle with it, struggle with the implications, have the conversations that help you sense, is God in it or not in it? And then act in small ways to see, if God beckons you back. I've done that with stuff. If it's a huge decision, I'll make a little bit of a decision that direction.
Yeah.
And then I want to see this seems to be God. I can go down that road. And the more I go down that road, the more certain I feel. The more at rest I feel in my heart about it. Or if I go down that road, I start feeling restless. Mm-hmm. I start feeling I can't pull it. Like I've done that with scheduling trips or whatever where, this seems like a good idea. And they're wanting me to come and I'm free. And so I start plotting for it. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes down to actually pulling the trigger on the ticket, I've got it all worked out and on United Airlines website. And I'm going, I just can't push the button and I don't know why. And I'll just go, okay, so there's a restlessness. So if it's still a trip I'm going to take, I'll book it tomorrow. I'm going to give God in the 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then sometimes in that time, it goes away. The trip goes away. And you go, well, God, thank you. I didn't respond to that. I love the struggle now. And I get for people who are just learning this journey and the frustration of, I just want to be certain. I get it. But I'll tell you this, 20 years from now, you'll be glad that you learn to walk in a different way. Not with the certainty of something external you can hang your hat on, but the certainty of a relationship with a father who's big enough to walk you through, even if you make a mistake. And even if he invites you back up a trail you went down that was not his.
But it's interesting, though, because the seductive allure of religion is selling that certainty. They come to you and they say, here's the certainty. Let me tell you exactly how to interpret scripture. Let me tell you exactly what that scripture means. Let me tell you, here it is for you. And it's all packaged up. And as long as you just follow these five easy steps that I've laid out for you, then you'll be right with God. And that's like, it's so tempting. It's so seductive because it often also has quote unquote Jesus's stamp on it too. Cause it might have some proof text. It might have some scripture thrown in there, and yet, man, I think that's such a great heart check. For really recognizing whether or not it's in alignment with who God is. They asked him the same question, right? Like they asked him, well, why are you teaching us in parables? Why don't you just spell it out to us? Why don't you just give it to us? And yet he didn't. He valued that process and that wrestling and that hunger too that comes with, man, I want to get into this. I want to wrestle through this. I want to figure this out. And, just like that butterfly says, I want to fly. It's not that they don't want to fly. It's not that they want to stay a worm. They have to do that work. They have to go through that process and they have to have that struggle.
Yeah, it's not a worm. It's a caterpillar.
Or caterpillar. Anyway. Sorry. Not worm. Caterpillar.
Oh, it's funny. It's a worm.
Caterpillar.
And somehow, even when Jesus was saying that, why don't you just tell us flat out? And Jesus' answer was, if I told you flat out, you wouldn't believe me and you would go to a darker place.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of why God doesn't just come at us with, here's the certainty of what I want you to do, because we would run for the hills freaked out.
Mm.
I know most of my life, even this thing with Lewis and Jim, and is he headed toward something? Because I know if he starts having a meeting and pulling these kids together, tell them about Jesus and explore some of that discipleship stuff, he could easily have 200 people hanging out with him. And now I'm going, so what road are we going down, God? And I really, most of my life, everything I'm doing now, I got here not by seeing a grand strategy and jumping on that bandwagon. I got here, took this step, which meant I had to take that step. And then if that was going to make any sense, I had to take that step. And now I'm in some place I never planned to get to, but was always more fruitful than the stuff Wayne would come up with in his own head. Mm. Even the book I'm writing now, just that kind of step by step kind of emerged. And then I'm not sure I could do it. I'm not sure that was the best way to do it. So my thing is, well, let me write a couple of chapters and see if that is there and see if this is workable. And what's so good about the way it's seemingly going now, and I'm still not committing to it because it may yet change. But what's so good about it now is this chart thing, which helps me understand it and which I'll be able to put in the back of the book. Now it's going to be a story, which is the way I want it, because it's more organic. And so it's not a chart to follow. It's, so that's why Jake, and that's why John said, and that's why that. And so I'm really excited about doing it this way. And I look back going, I would have never contrived this myself. So now I'm in, I'm struggling with the chrysalis of this thing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm kind of out of it now. The wings are starting to fly a little bit. I'm going, I think this might work. And I wonder if the caterpillar ever feels that when it crawls out and goes, I think this might work. I might be able to take flight here in a minute. It must be a moment for them.
Do you think they even think about it, though? Or is it just...
No, I don't know what insects think. Come on, man.
Oh, I know.
I have no idea.
But, like... How often, when we're in the process, do we think about the struggle in that lens, right? Like that we actually process it and say, okay, Lord, like I'm in this struggle and there's value in this struggle so that I have that relational strength. I have that relational context that's built up, that I have those deep levels of trust that, you know, do we actually consider it through that lens when we're wrestling through the challenges in the moment?
I do now, yeah. But like you said, times past. No, I would sit there because my bent about following God's direction was always the path of least resistance and best hope of success in Wayne's human reasoning. Mm. So yeah. The struggle roads, if it looked like struggle, yeah, not going down there. The only thing I got caught in struggle is when I didn't have any choice and I was in the middle of it, like getting kicked out of the congregation you planted. I would never have chosen that as a route.
Yeah.
Right. So, but there are other things now where I'm choosing the route, but I am that aware that if I avoid trouble, if that's the mission in life, to avoid risk or avoid trouble, I'm going to end up fruitless.
Yeah.
Because almost everything in God that's fruitful involves that faith, that trust enough to go, I'm going to keep going down a road I don't understand, for which I don't have certainty in the outcome. My only certainty is in the Father I love. And in the sense that he's leading me this way. And so, yeah, I'm going to go. And it's not about avoiding risk anymore. It's not about avoiding trouble. But at my younger days, it would have been. So I wouldn't have been on these roads. I would have stayed on the certain roads. But again, only certain to my flesh. Not certain to what God was doing and revealing. So, and I love this. I just love it so much.
And yet that's the beauty of it too, right? That he started with the process of winning you into that love of, look, no, you can trust me and that you can find your certainty in me, that my heart is good for you. That's where he started.
Yep.
And then as time went on, you know, that like I think about when Paul, right, he was processing about whether he wanted to go into a city and he feels like this pause and it's like, well, if you go in there, you're actually going to get flogged and you might get imprisoned and it could be very, very painful for you. And I always look at that passage and think about it and it's like, would I do that? And yet, you know, would I say that I could do that right now? I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think that would be a definite yes. But I do think that the continuing to grow in God being my certainty and my relationship with Father being the primary source of identity, affirmation, and certainty that I lean into, the more that that's the reality in my life, the more that I'm willing to take on whatever it is that he puts in front of me.
Yeah. And that was, you know, Paul going back to Jerusalem and being warned by Agabus, you know, a prophecy, you're going to be imprisoned. And for that reason, he doesn't stop going, which I think this is brilliant. It wasn't that Agabus heard wrong, but what Paul was thinking, that might be, you know, so you can pray for me rather than try and discourage me from following it. Because not only do we like to save ourselves from trouble, we like to save our friends from trouble. And it's harder being in that space with them, which is trying to encourage God's working that risks some trouble, but has the potential of the fruitfulness that we're really desiring. I got this email from Jack a while back, and I've been holding on to it. It says, when I was 23 and struggling and wrestling with God and my fate, this is 23 and wrestling with his fate. That's funny, because I remember doing that too when I was that age. I went to see my high school pastor. After a long talk, we came to see that often our frustrations arise because we feel we are not where we were meant to be, but we belong elsewhere. But God refuses to let us get there, that he has abandoned or has intentionally held us back. He read a verse from Genesis that has stuck with me ever since. Surely God was in this place, and I didn't even know it. Mm. Isn't that a beautiful scripture?
Yeah.
Surely God was in this place. So he says, even when it seemed like God had no concern for my plans, we have the ability to look back and retroactively acknowledge his presence and walk that he was taking with us all along and see that he was in that place the whole time. We just couldn't see him.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could speak to how you have come to acknowledge his presence in the moment. I fear I am always having to look back to acknowledge him and am missing the wonder of him being with me now. And if you could speak to seeing God that was with us all along, not in contrived everything happens for a reason kind of way, but in accepting what he did for us and what he didn't do for us and becoming at peace enough to acknowledge that he is with us now and that he loves us. So first, I would ask you why you think we're missing his presence in the moment. What do you see looking back a couple of years that might help you consider what you might be missing at the time? Any common threads there? That's a great question.
Yeah.
Because I've said that a lot here. I can look back 2 years in my past and go, yeah, boy, I see what God was doing now. At the time, I couldn't. I think I'm getting, after 20-some-odd years, 27 to 28 years of kind of learning to live loved and all that, I think I'm better at being with God in the moment. Mm. Even if I'm not seeing what he's doing. I've abandoned the self-doubt that says God's not with me here. Once you start feeling like you're abandoned from God and you're mostly, see, I realize now when I feel abandoned by God, that means I had expectations God didn't meet.
Hmm.
Not that God isn't at work doing, even if God's at work means just hold right here.
Yeah.
I haven't got anything to show you yet about this. This is still unfolding. Even if it's that, the freedom to be able to be with God in the moment, you have to lose this idea that God, that the dark night of the soul, God abandons us just for this pure creativity of making sure we love him enough, which is just the most bizarre way of thinking to me. I'd much rather believe I lose sight of him because I get so emotionally invested in the outcome I want, that holy indifference thing we've been talking about over the last month or so. I get so invested in what I want. I get so invested in my own security and certainty and lack of at-riskness. I think we may be answering his email in this podcast. I've been holding us for a couple of months and I wasn't sure what I'd say exactly, but I think wouldn't the quest for certainty and for a trouble-free life make it difficult to see God in the moment, even though he's right there? And so then we stumble into things that end up being a mess, and then we feel even more abandoned because this was exactly the way God wanted us to go. And we weren't going to be bright enough to choose it because he was leading us. So he just kind of lets us stumble into it. And we can look back and go, crud, that was a great decision I made back there, but for all the wrong reasons or for not seeing it. And I think it's that investment in outcome and unwillingness to risk that keeps us from seeing that God was in that place. And my assumption is God is right here with me, even though, like I've said, over the last year, I've gone through some very difficult roads in my own personal life.
Yeah.
And it's challenged me in ways I've never been challenged. I've never once lost sight of God in it, God's purpose in it. I've had an inkling of how I need to respond. I've followed that. God's been gracious to bring other confirmations in, from people having dreams to just people having a scripture on their heart to people just saying, you know what, my heart hurts for you, but I think the choices you are making are godly choices. And go, okay, then I'm going to keep on that path. Even to a dream the other night, which God affirmed yet again that this is the pathway he has for me. Mm. And it's not an easy one, but I have never once doubted his presence. I'm not getting the outcome I want. I would love a different outcome than the one I've got.
Yeah.
But I'm not in control of that outcome. There's other people involved in this. And so, can you love enough to wait through what God needs to do in other people to bring the healing you're wanting to have happen or whatever? And so to me, I love this. I love being in the moment and knowing he's with me and not having to wait 2 years to look back and figure it out.
I would say the ratio is shifting now to where I'm more able to just enjoy in the day, more able to just enjoy in the moment. And yet he still surprises me with glances back that were, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years. I'm like, oh, that I had no idea you were doing that. Or just confirmations or affirmations of, yeah, Kyle, you've been hearing me okay. You've been walking with me. You've been hearing my voice. You've been recognizing those nudges. And I love you. And so I'm just going to give you some fun confirmation of that.
And isn't that one of the reasons why when Jesus in Ezekiel 33 said, listen, I'm going to get rid of the worthless shepherds and I will be your shepherd and I will lead you into safe pasture and you'll never be afraid to begin, never need to be afraid again, is really not, I mean, because you can read that going, oh, my circumstances are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll never have a reason to be afraid again. And the point is, no, it's not that your circumstances will be awesome, is that you'll have shepherd.
Yes.
And you know that you're safe in him no matter, and if you're safe in him with what's coming at you, the anxiety is, the fog of anxiety doesn't block out your vision of him. Mm. I guess I don't want to say it that way. Because when I feel like I can't see him, I never look to God as he's hiding from me. Mm. I look at it as, okay, I'm lost in the fog. He's here. I'm not seeing him.
Yeah.
So how do I find a way inside of him, which is always the prayer I talk about. What is it about your love, God? I don't know. Or what am I missing about you that if I knew it, I wouldn't be anxious here? And letting him walk back the anxiety so that I can see him in the midst of what I'm going through. Or, like I did in the past, I just gut it out for two more years, look back going, oh, son of a gun, he was there. I like Jack's hunger here.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, surely God was in that place and we didn't see him. I want to really learn to say, oh, God is in this place. He's with us right now. And yet I'm in the middle of circumstances I don't like. And I wish God would change them, but I'm willing to keep wandering through this.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.